We are happy to welcome back to the show from Defector and the co-host of the Distraction Podcast, our friend David Roth. Hello there, David.
Hey, how's it going?
Doing well, thank you. How did the live recording of the podcast go last night?
We had a really good time. It still feels weird to be in a room with a bunch of people, like let alone people that have paid money to watch you record a podcast, which is, I don't like the kink shame. That's their business. They can do whatever they want with the money that they make. But just being in a space, like even though, you know, it was like they checked vaccinations and, you know, people were wearing masks, you know, at the tables where the recording was being held and all that, it's still just, I don't know, I'm still getting used to it. I like it. It's a good feeling. But it is weird that there's still this kind of hangover on it. Like, you know, and then if I'm not talking or responding to something, I'm kind of like, wow, there's a lot of people in here, huh? Like, is that wise?
Yeah, my wife and I went to a play last weekend, and it was the same thing. Everybody had to be vaxxed and proof of vaccination, and I think, or a negative test to get in. Everybody was masking, and yet I found myself for the first, I don't know, half hour or 45 minutes saying, why are there so many people and why are they so damn close to me?
No, it really is. I mean, I think that will go away. I know I went to my first live music, my first rock show in 2 years, you know, and that was like just a couple weeks ago. And it was the same sort of thing, you know, from where we started, you know, just like being in there. You know, I wasn't in the mosh pit. I'm not a young man, but there were enough people in there that at the same time, like, you know, I was having those thoughts. And then at some point, you know, like it just takes over, which I noticed that you didn't say for the entire play you were thinking about.
Right.
At some point,
right.
It's like the things that you love enough that eventually like you remember yourself, you know, but it is still like this bit to fight through. That's kind of, I don't know. I can't wait to not have to fight through it.
That'll be a fun day. I'm guessing, you know, turn of the next decade, we've got a shot at that, the way things are going.
Yeah. That'll be good. While we're all still young-ish.
Yeah.
Not young at all, actually. We'll all be quite old.
I've long passed that stop on the highway here. Let's talk. So much to discuss. Let's begin with Major League Baseball. Wow, labor peace, 26 years. Yeah, that's just not enough for Rob Manfred. He wants to find a way to screw things up. I don't know. Both sides have their share of blame in this, but I look at a bad commissioner and an awful group of owners.
It's an awful commissioner. I mean, I think with Manfred, it's worth remembering. I mean, no commissioner, I think, that oversees a lockout is doing the commissioner's job right. Like, just in the broader scope of things. Obviously, they work for the owners. They're going to do what the owners want, and that's what Manfred is doing here. But I think, broadly speaking, for the health of the game, just in terms of, like, making baseball fun to watch, economically healthy, and something that just has a sort of a happy claim on its place in American culture. Like, this is still the summer sport, you know, like people like me grew up caring about it in ways that they don't care about other sports. And I think for as long as Manfred has been in charge, the vibe has been off, like not in some, you know, like woo woo crystal visions way either. Like, he doesn't really seem to like baseball very much. And the general tenor of things has just been sour all the way through. And, you know, of course, like, this is the apotheosis of that. Like, it doesn't get more bad vibes than, like, a labor lockout in early December. But it is frustrating to me to see how reckless he and the owners are being with the health of the sport. Because, like, they've got their own interests, you know, and they're going to be rich no matter what happens. Like, I kind of would like to be able to keep enjoying baseball. You know, like, I have a lot of riding on it. Like, I don't really have a lot of stuff booked for July and August as a general rule. So it's frustrating to me to see them messing around with it the way that they are.
Now, if they can figure things out and have a 2022 season, well, your Mets have gotten a lot more interesting in the last couple of weeks.
More interesting? I'm not sure how much better. I mean, they have gotten better, but there's something really sort of strange about what's going on there right now. I think there's like maybe five people in that front office that think of themselves as being the actual GM, up to and including the owner of the team. And, like, maybe not including the guy that they literally hired to be the GM. So it's a confusing moment. But they did come out of it with Max Scherzer. That's cool. They did come out of it with Eduardo Escobar, who I've learned is such a big fan of Fogo de Chao that he has a special card that lets him eat for free at every Fogo de Chao in the United States.
Wow.
So I'm really looking forward to cheering for that guy. Imagine how much work you have to put in on Instagram to get them to send you the Fogo de Chao black card.
That's commitment. I like that.
It really is. I mean, like, that's, he's got, as soon as the bat slows down and he's no longer a viable big leaguer, like, if he just wanted to become a beef influencer, I think that there's a really rich future in that for him.
What do you think will happen with the Hall of Fame vote this year? Will we begin to see some of what I guess we're calling the steroid era guys get in?
I feel like we're trending in that direction. I've been looking at the ballots, you know, the people, the writers that post their ballots online. It always seems like the only ones that I ever see are just the most perverse ones in the world. Like, where just a guy who only votes for, like, Omar Vizquel and Tory Hunter, and he's like, I don't have to tell you why I do what I do. You know, and I know that there's, like, there's enough worthy candidates on this that, like, they could put 10 guys into the hall next year, and I would feel fine about it. But it's been such a laborious process of, like, working their way towards the idea of, like, getting cool with some of the steroid guys going in. Like, and to me, you know, the use of the Hall of Fame, I happen to love the Hall of Fame as a museum. I think as an institution and as, like, a sort of a collection of plaques, it's the absolute worst of baseball. I mean, just, again, kind of like sour, bad vibes, like gatekeeping-y type stuff.
Yeah.
But the reason the museum is cool is that it's all in there. You know, like, the Black Sox are in there. The, like, the moments that are, like, low points in the game are there. And I don't think of the steroid era as being an especially low point. But I do think if you're trying to tell the story of the last, you know, three decades of baseball, like, you can't do it without Roger Clemens and probably also without Mark McGwire in there. Or Sammy Sosa, I guess. I mean, but at this point, that's a bigger haul than it seems like most of the voters are willing to sign off on. I'm just kind of hoping that, like, Scott Rolen will make it. Like, these guys that I think deserve it, but are having, just being put through the ringer for no particular reason.
I'm with you on that. We're talking with David Roth here on Downtown. The NBA season rolls along. I don't know how closely you're watching. It feels to me like there are about a dozen teams that are two games over 500, and that's the league right now.
I mean, there's the Warriors and the Suns seem incredibly good. But they play late at night, and as I've mentioned earlier, I'm in my golden years, so, like, I haven't really been able to do as much watching of that as I might have. Eastern Conference, feeling very Eastern Conference, not necessarily in the ways that you want. But someone pointed out the other day, it was my coworkers, that, like, a lot of the teams that are, like, 11 and 10 right now are actually super fun to watch. They're not good, exactly. But, like, this is, like, the Timberwolves, for instance, are the sort of thing where, like, you wouldn't, unless you had league pass or were in the greater Twin Cities area or had, you know, some sort of perverse attraction to watching, you know, Central Time Zone sports, you wouldn't think to cross the street for the Timberwolves, but they're cool. Like, they're, Anthony Edwards is great. Karl-Anthony Towns is playing great. They figured out how to hide D'Angelo Russell on defense enough that he's not hurting the team. But it's also, like, I'm aware that this is, like, very much like winter sports with no baseball happening. Like, I'm talking myself into the Timberwolves in real time. Like, I could do anything else. You know what I mean? With my life,
right.
This is what I've chosen to do. But some of those mid-tier teams, like, I think are worth a watch, even if they're not, you know, likely to win a championship.
All right, let's veer in a different direction here. Are there Republican politicians figuring out the best way to pose their family with automatic weapons for that crucial Christmas card?
God, it's so really perverse. So there's two big ones. Do you have a favorite between the Thomas Massey AR-15 Christmas photo and the Boebert family AR-15 Christmas photo?
I think in terms of the bizarre, I have to go with the Thomas Massey family because they, first of all, because of the proximity to the Michigan school shooting, you have to admire their efforts to get it out there quickly while everything was still fresh. And then just the joy in their faces with doing something they know that will horrify a good percentage of the population. You have to give them a tip of the cap for that.
Yeah, I think you pretty much hit the nail on the head with that one. I mean, there's something about Massey is one of those guys. It's the sort of thing where, like, you want to say that this is, like, a symbol of our moment and, you know, like, how bad everything is. And, like, it's definitely a symbol of our moment and how bad everything is. Like, I don't want to take away from that. There's always been, like, clown congressmen. Like, people that districts elect just because they don't want them in the district most of the year. Like, that's the one thing that I think you can say for, like, Thomas Massey's district is that, like, I don't know, 35 weeks out of the year, like, he's gone. Like, all week, you don't, there's zero chance that you're going to see him at the supermarket. And that's a win for them, I guess. But he's not delivering much on anything else. I mean, like, most of what he does, it seems like, is designed. He has, like, sort of adult libertarian disease. Like, where he just, like, lives to, like, outrage other people in his peer group in a way that mostly just, like, bores and annoys them. But, like, obviously, it's working for him. To me, the Boebert picture is weirder, not just because of, like, how bizarre their home is. Like, it looks like a, like, one of those, like, 70s Cronenberg movies where everything's really brown and there's, like, carpeting on the ceiling. Like, it's a strange house.
Yes.
But it's also, like, those kids are not into that photo. Like, whatever you can say for Thomas Massey's family and, like, the very young children that he's handed, you know, very high-powered firearms to, like, they're wearing their sweaters and they're doing the Christmas card thing. Like, Boebert, it looks like almost like a candid photo. Like, the whole family's just patrolling the house, like, weapons-free, and at some point right. Their husband's like, you know what, let's get a picture of all this. I think Tom Massey will like it.
Right, I think, you know, Lauren Boebert said, arm up, there are communists outside. You need to be ready at all times.
Yeah, which is like, you mean like the mailman, right?
Right.
Or you mean like the neighbors that don't like to make eye contact with us?
All
it's bizarre with all of that stuff. Just seeing how unhappy and kind of like, I mean, everybody's pretty unhappy right now. You know, like we're on month 19 of a pandemic. Like it's not, no one's exactly getting what they want. And yet, like, to go around the way that Lauren Boebert seems to go around, like just the idea of being constantly mad at people right. that you work near and disgusted by everything because of how much TV you watch. Like at some point, like you could just do something else, like join a bowling league or something. Right. You could still be in Congress even. You could just be like 60% less mad by making two really easy choices and probably like live longer.
I thought it was interesting this week that Dan Crenshaw, who I've always thought of as a performance artist, called out some of them for being just that, performance artists and grifters. Is he just a wee bit smarter than the others and realizes how this will all end?
I think maybe. I'm not sure how this is all going to end, to be honest. I do think that he is aware. I do think you're right that he is playing a character, you know, and that he's got this idea of sort of being like the, you know, epic Marine conservative guy, which is, you know, a pretty fertile row to hoe if you're in politics in 2021. I do think that there's, that like Lauren Boebert and Marjorie Taylor Greene are the sort of people that like, if they weren't in Congress, would be like getting in screaming arguments with other patrons at Panera. Like, they're not normal, like, well-balanced people.
Right. You know?
And I think that Crenshaw sees himself as, like, maybe not a statesman, but not like that.
Right.
You know, that, like, he can go to AutoZone without having to pull a firearm on someone else. Like, and that's, like, a very low bar, but I'm really not sure that, like, Marjorie Taylor Greene could get through a normal retail experience without, like, dialing 911 or threatening. So.
I think you're absolutely right on that. Hey, I want to thank you so much, too, for getting us together with Drew McGarry. Loved his book and loved having him on the show.
Yeah, I'm glad you got to. I think the book is fantastic. I mean, I'm biased because he's my friend and we do the podcast together and stuff. But it was really, it was a nice reminder. Like, first of all, I mean, how scarily close he came to dying in a fluky accident. But then just like how much work he did to get back to just being sort of like a normal, slightly calmer version of the person I became friends with. Like, I wasn't in it and I didn't see how hard that was, but he put a lot of work into it. It's all on the page. I recommend the book.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
To people. But I'm glad you guys talked. I feel like that's, there's a main connection there that I had been waiting a really long time to be done. And I'm glad that you were able to close that circuit.
Well, we appreciate your help. Speaking of Maine, are you coming up at all for the holidays?
Yes, Christmas is booked. We are looking forward to it. We've already made, like, we're trying to basically do the most practical type of shopping that we can do for my father-in-law and my, you know, wife's dad. It's very hard. Obviously, it involves beans, but it's, like, a question of, like, mostly it does because, like, We know that if the gloves we get him, if he's like, these aren't practical enough, like they have like some fabric on them, then like he could always go there and just get something more ridiculous. And that's important for us. Like, I think we've managed to get some stuff that he will eventually either use or exchange for something he uses. And by no means is that a given in any year. So I'm looking forward to being up there too, obviously. Just nice not to be in New York City ever, but like I've really come to, I don't know, it's not as white as it used to be, but Christmas in Maine is still pretty pleasant to behold.
Absolutely. Well, hope you have a great holiday season. Always fun to catch up with you, David. We appreciate it, and we'll check in with you again in the brand new, infinitely better year that's coming.
Right on. Thanks for it, guys, and have a good holidays yourself. I'll see you later.
Thanks, bye. David. David Roth from Defector and the Distraction Podcast.